Welcome to the ID10T podcast number 1015. I'll be performing in September at the DC Improv. Those dates are September 5, 6, 7, and then September 13, 14 at the Improv in Chicago. So if you, just Google those clubs. I think we might have the ticket links up at id10t.com/tour, where we are adding more products. Oh my gosh, you guys, there's some fun Rick and Morty stuff coming up and some fun horror-themed socks that I am a fan of and the blood splatter pops. And so, ID10T.com and, again, more stuff coming really soon. But let's talk about you, the ID10T community. Events at ID10T.com, like Amanda who writes, I just want to let you know about a great tabletop game that a cool dude in my quaint little city of Huntsville, Alabama has made. It's called Hedgelord. It's a competitive maze puzzle game where you have to get your character and beast companion through the maze while blocking, avoiding other characters and their beast companions. The game was designed and is built by Dustin Timbrook and some local artists, buddies here in Huntsville. Follow Dustin on Instagram at DustinTimBrook. The link for his store is in the bio. There you can pre-order the copy of Hedgelord or buy some cool apparel. Keep in mind there is a waiting period for the game because he's making them by hand. Oh, I love it. All this by his little lonesome, help from his totally rad wife when she's not at her day job. All right, thanks, Amanda. Also, Kristen writes, my name is Kristen Espinal, and I'm a comedian from New York City who's making a thing. My buddy Josh Cole and I host New Jump City, a podcast recapping and reviewing the week in manga and superhero comics. It's pretty much Cliff Notes with opinions. It's available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Mostly cover Marvel and DC comics, but in the interest of building an awesome nerd community, we're open to reviewing indie comics as well. Anybody who listens to your show and is interested can submit their work to newjumpcitypod@gmail.com. This episode is Judy Greer, who is a brilliant actor. I mean, and Judy's been in so many amazing things that you've seen before. I mean, some of the greatest comedy things of all time Judy Greer has been involved in. And she has a new movie out called Driven, which Lydia and I saw the other night, and it's great. It is also Jason Sudeikis is in it and Lee Pace. And it's about the John DeLorean situation and sort of the, if you're familiar with the DeLorean trial and the entrapment case and everything, and it's really well done. And that comes out Friday, August 16th. And then Where'd You Go, Bernadette? Which an actress by the name of Kate Blanchett is in, who you may have heard of, and that's in theaters also August 16th. So make it a Judy Greer weekend. In the old days, we'd make it a blockbuster night, but this weekend we're making it a Judy Greer night / weekend. So all Judy Greer all this weekend, and she is hilarious and phenomenal on the podcast. Just someone that I've been such a huge fan of for years. And just comedy nerded over endlessly. So thanks, Judy Greer, for coming on the podcast, which is number 1015. And the thing starts rolling right now.
Initiating ID10T protocol.
Are you running around doing press all day?
Yes. What gave it away? Was it my giant car and my team of people and my beautiful outfit and my professional hair and makeup? It is. Not that I wouldn't have come to you like this, because I totally would have.
It is. Well, it's also very hot today, and you're wearing a jacket.
It's for fall.
Is it breathable?
It's cotton, I think.
Okay, good. Good.
What did they put in this item? I don't know. None of these clothes are mine. It's polyester. 100% not breathable.
So is it all sorts of TV press and radio press?
It's like this. I'm doing the AV Club and Corden.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And then I did a bunch of like phone interviews last week.
Great.
Which now I'm like, existing art.
Got it. Just as little as possible.
Like, why, when you're aging, would you ever want to do photo shoots again? Like, you're like... Before, I'm like, I need more art. Like, we need more pictures. Now I'm like, just use the old stuff.
So your advice to people is just stockpile as much as
get a ton of pictures of yourself, like, in your 20s and 30s, and then stop. And then...
Never.
And then just have them use existing art.
And then just refuse.
Yeah.
Then you could be, like, 90 years old and be like, just fuck, I don't care.
Yeah.
I can use the...
That's the plan. I heard that, like, when you die and they do your Academy Award, like, if you're in the Academy and they do the thing...
Yeah.
That they use, like, the most recent picture of you. And I'm like, that is bullshit, man. Like, you should be able to pick the picture that, like, you want your dead person picture to be.
That is a great idea. All Academy members on their account should have a death picture that they can upload.
The death picture.
That's a
fucking
great
this
idea.
This is my death picture.
Yeah.
I'm an Academy member. This is my death picture, and this is one I want used.
You have to honor that.
Yeah, you have to. I pay a due.
Because you don't know, do they... So they is it just they don't want to deal with publicists or whatever? So they're like, we don't care. We're just going to use whatever the most recent thing we find
is.
You
know, I haven't done a deep dive into why they choose the pictures that they do. But when I get some free time, I am going to look into that.
Or we should start a company that's basically like – it's sort of like death image insurance for performers.
Yeah.
So once you die, we'll make sure that your social media is handled, and then we'll make sure
it could be like for all like recognizable figures. Like we could even have like kings and queens and like part people like in the royal family, even though they probably want to handle that themselves. Like they might want to have like a U.S. version of it.
Yeah,
you know,
I can't think of any worse. It's so funny how obsessed with princesses and royalty our culture is.
Yeah,
because it's. Being that sounds like the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, it does. It seems like, yeah, like you just can't win. But then I don't understand, like, what is their day like? Like what do they do? Do they just, like, what do you do all day if you're a princess?
I don't know. I think you attend things and you have to go out and make appearances. But the crazy thing is that if you wear... one even slightly weird top, it's a fucking news story.
I know.
And it's like, slap in the face to the queen. She hates purple. And Meghan Markle wore purple. Like, what the fuck? What is this?
But then does that mean she can't? Like, it must be weird for, like, Meghan specifically, just because she was, like, a regular person.
Right.
So, like, she can't go to Target anymore. Like, it all, no, for me, boils down to Target. And, like, how famous are you? Can you go to Target?
Have you passed the Target threshold?
No, I could definitely go to Target. No one cares about me.
I can too. I can go to Target.
I stopped going to Target because they stopped serving popcorn there, and that was the main draw for me.
What?
They don't serve popcorn anymore.
Why?
Like, there's nothing better than, like, having a day off, going to Target, like, around noon.
Yep.
Maybe if you partake in legal weed, you might have done that. And then, like, maybe you might get popcorn, and you might strap it into your... cart and walk around Target.
I think it'd be really funny if you leave Target with an empty cart and then just the popcorn's empty.
Eating popcorn and looking at all the things in Target and then
I could use a shower caddy, but I'm not gonna.
I don't feel like buying anything today. What? I mean, has anyone ever in the history of Target walked out without buying something at Target?
No, I don't think so. It's not possible. There's just too many impulse buy snare traps.
The only thing that could happen, I think, because I've thought about this, is that you go to return things that you did buy and you force yourself to walk out without buying something. But I don't think that counts because you're returning a thing that you bought.
I feel like I would need to put on, like, horse blinders to not see anything in my peripheral vision. It would be the safest way to walk through a Target.
Yeah, horse blinders. Yes.
Because they have, like, there's great tech stuff there. I'm not going to lie. They've got some good clothes at Target, some good t-shirts.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I might need some four-color pens on the way out and some dog snacks. Maybe some greenies that I wasn't aware
of. I buy a lot of thank you notes and, like, you know, stock up on cleaning products and all that stuff. I mean, I really am all in.
I think, though, the best place to be in the business is working regularly, but still able to go to Target. I do think that's the best case scenario.
I remember once, I forget when, I was talking to Jennifer Garner and she was like, oh God, I'd love to go to Target. I was like, dude, you of all people would love Target. Like, Target would be like your jam. Like, this was years ago. I'm hoping she's been. But, like, she said she went, like, one time and it was a magical wonderland.
And then so then when the paparazzi show up, do they... Does she get cool points for shopping at Target, or are they like, Jennifer Garner shopping at Target?
I mean, I don't think she... Well, I don't know if she's been recently, but at the time, she had only been once, and it was a bummer for her that she couldn't go back.
It is
a... Or she, you know, she can. It's not like you can't. It's just that, like, how much do you want to deal with when you're, like, going to buy diapers and, like, some, you know, socks and, like, a new sports bra.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, like, seven other random things, like you just said. Like, oh, thank you notes. Like, oh, my God, they have stickers here.
Maybe they should just build a Target for, like, super famous. Just,
oh,
like,
God,
like,
the famous person Target. One like in Malibu, like it, or like at the Country Mart, it's like a Target pop up.
There could only be 10 people in it at a time.
Yes.
There's a velvet rope outside.
Yes, I remember once there was a children's book. Do you remember Newsroom, that cafe on Robertson?
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
there was a children's bookstore across the street from it, and one time Prince went there, and they like closed the store so that Prince could shop for.
Did they think he was just a really precocious child? Like, why is this kid all in
like,
purple?
We have to watch this one. I just thought that was so cool.
That's
I was
adorable.
Like, oh. Yeah.
That makes me happy. I want to hear more weird, almost mythological stories about Prince like that, but that kind of like regular guy Prince, not the crazy, you know, man god.
Yeah.
But just the dude who just wants to go to, like, have a...
Like, buy some, like, kids' books and, like, the, like, teriyaki salmon at, like, Newsroom, which was really good. And
did they close the Newsroom?
It's something else. I drove by it the other day, and it was something else, but I was like, ugh, that salmon they had there was so good.
Yeah, well, nothing good. You know, like, Los Angeles ruins everything good.
Why do we do that?
I don't know. Because I think at the base of it, the entertainment business can't have nice things.
We can't be trusted with them.
We just can't be trusted with them. And anything
or
good.
Old things.
Or exactly.
We can't have nice things or old things.
No, those two. Well, vintage. We could say vintage.
Okay.
Yeah, we could say vintage. Are you a vintage person at all? Or you are?
Yeah. I like that kind of thing.
I mean, whenever I go on the road to do comedy, I always find like local vintage places.
Oh, 100%. When you're like, I'm usually around like three, like number three on the call sheet or see like the call sheet, you know.
Yeah.
So like number one and two and three, those are like the bigger roles. So when you're like four and down, like that's when you have a lot of days off on location. And that's when you do a lot of antiquing and a lot of vintage shopping. And then like number one and two on the call sheet are all like, what did you do yesterday? Like, where did you go? Like, where did you eat? Because they never really get to experience these places.
That doesn't sound fun to me.
It's not. Trust me. I love being four and above because you can, like I said, like I can go antiquing. I can go thrifting. I have such a kick-ass collection of old Levi's jeans because, like, in all the Carolinas I've worked at, like, everyone, there's good stuff. I had to limit my antiquing because my husband was like, it's getting crazy. Mm-hmm. Like, I started collecting snails.
Amazing.
Which made it easier because then it was like when you walk into an antique store and you're like, I could buy all this stuff. Like, it's so inexpensive. Mm-hmm. Then you're just like, okay, but I'm only going to buy...
Give me them snails.
Snails or a brass animal, like a small brass animal. I will make an exception for that. But that helped a lot because I was like shipping back like mirrors and lamps and rugs and just like all... He's like, I don't know where you think we live and like how much room you think we have and so much in storage. But I'm like, but it's such a good deal.
I know. I just did that. I was just in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I went to this sort of like row of warehouse antique vendors.
Oh, a dream.
It was because it looked from the road, it looked like just like this burned out warehouse. But when you drove in inside and some of the stalls were literally condemned by the city, but then the rest of them were these amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And I like bought this really cool chair and disassembled it and FedExed it back.
Yeah, I know. It's people. And I've had like in where was I in Shreveport, Louisiana, there were these two great lamps. And I was like, hey, can you guys ship these back for me? And they're like, well, you know, we never done that before, but we'll, yeah, I think we could do that. I'm like, great. I mean, and they were so proud of them. Like, the guy was like, we figured it out. We found a place. We're going to do it. It's going to cost like $25, though. I'm like, where are you shipping from? Because I'm only shipping from there from now on. Like,
yeah,
I'll send things to Shreveport to ship from wherever you're shipping from because that is nothing.
I feel like, you know, you go to these places and they're just... these hidden gems.
Yes.
And they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. This, you know, Victorian chair is going to run you $120. You're like, okay, I guess I'll be taken advantage of in this way. And then secretly you're like, this would cost $1,200.
I know. I mean, we could make such a killing if we had a store here. I'm always like texting pictures to my friend who owns a store. Like, do you want this? Like, it's $10. Like, it's like beautiful cloisonné ashtray. Like, yeah, bring it. Give it. Like, I feel like this is a, and I would enjoy doing it. Although once something becomes your job, then it's like,
then it's no fun anymore. Yeah, then it becomes a chore.
But I never haggle with people when it's like that kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I feel like an ass.
Yes, because you, first of all, you're really only going to save like $5 or $12.
I know.
And second of all, it's like, you know, like that money means something to them. That's their business, and it keeps them going. So yeah, I don't.
And here, I feel like that's bad. It's in bad taste. But then sometimes you can tell people kind of want to, but I'm like, I'm not doing it. I'll
only do it if I'm buying a bunch of stuff and just say, like, can I get some sort of group pricing on this? But not for, like, I'm not going to nickel and dime some local antique vendor when the prices are already insanely low.
There was one place, I was shooting a movie in Hamilton, New York, and there I looked up, like, what to do on the weekend, and there was, like, a big antiques fair, like a fairground, but it was inside because it was winter, thank God. So I somehow finagled a ride to the place because I didn't have a rental car, and it was in Rochester, so it was like an hour. I got a ride from one of the producers who was going to like shoot pool in a pool hall or something, and I like shopped all day, and then I was like, I'll just grab a taxi and like meet you wherever you are, producer man. And there was no cabs. There was no way to get out. It was getting dark, and I'm like standing by the entrance in Rochester, New York, of this like super random fairground. And I have like my, you know, my things I've purchased with me, and this woman and her mom pull over, and they're like, aren't you Judy Greer? Aren't you from Arrested Development? I'm like, yes, I am. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm trying to get a ride anywhere. Like, I need to go to this pool hall. Here's the address. She was like, we'll take you. I'm like, awesome. And I totally got in the car with her and her mom, and they drove me to this pool hall where my producer was shooting pools. Still.
Well, you're first of all, very lucky. You never know the famous mother-daughter celebrity serial hunters.
You know, I was like, this is sexist, but I would not have done it with a man.
Well, of course not.
I know, but like,
wouldn't have either. I don't blame you.
But like, doesn't that mean I shouldn't also do it with a woman?
Not with a mother and daughter. And also, you know, you have an internal... Like, I'm sure your subconscious brain assessed the entire situation.
Yeah, they had a horse. What do you call it? What you sit on it and ride?
Carriage?
No,
a saddle?
Yes, they had a saddle in the bag, which also I was like, they like animals.
I call it a horse chair. You can call it whatever you want. You guys get these horse chairs?
I remember the word saddle.
Why would you need to, though? It's just like your brain. Listen, your brain only has so much RAM. There's some parts it's going to look, you're going to get a list of words like, how often do you saddle? Rarely. No. Throw it in.
Unless I'm thinking that I'm like saddled with stress or like all these things to do. But like, no, they had the saddle in the back of their Volvo wagon, also a Volvo. I felt like I was in good hands.
And it all worked out fine.
It did. I made it to the pool hall, also kind of weird. And they're like, are you sure this is like the right place? And it was in a sketchy place as well. I'm like, yeah, no, that's. That's it. Chad's in there, so I'll just get out.
No one's ever going to believe that story. We met Judy Greer at the fairground. She had a bunch of antiques, and we dropped her to pool hall. You're lying.
I know. That happened. That happened a few years ago.
I saw that you had written a book. Was it an essay or a series of essays?
Yeah.
That was similar about the thing of being fourth on the call sheet. Like, and it had a great name. Like, I don't know what
I don't know what you know me from. Yeah. Yes, Confessions of a Co-Star. That is my book because that is my life.
Well,
because
you can't, whenever someone says, what do I know you from? It's like, I understand the intention behind it, but it's like, now I'm going to list my resume and you're going to say no to everything.
Oh my God. And it's never ending. And like, my resume, I mean. No, like, hence the book. It goes on I wrote in my book about how there's this moment where first everyone's excited because they like spotted a celebrity and I knew it. But like, now they don't know what you're from. And then you have to tell them all the things. Mm-hmm. And then it gets awkward because they don't know any of them, and they start to get like mad at you, like you're not able to like
you're not
prove
helping
yourself
them out. Yeah.
To them. The whole thing is so awkward and like annoying, and yeah, I try really hard to be super nice because I'm from the Midwest and I don't want to hurt people's feelings, but
right.
at the same time, I'm like. It would be easy to be a real dick because, like, you could just be like, listen to what you're asking this
yeah.
person. Like, what do I, how would I know? How do I know what you watch? How do I know what you, like, anyway.
I don't live in your head. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
TV?
Yeah, some people
Movies?
Say, oh, are you on TV? I just go, sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't, and then I
yeah.
hope that that sort of kicks, oh, because it is, it doesn't matter how many things you list, it's never the thing.
No, it's never. One guy, this one was like, this was customs. The guy at customs was like holding my passport to come back in the United States, and he was like, "I'm not handing you this till you tell me what." And I'm like, "I'm pretty sure that's not legal. Like that feels like extortion or something." But like, I couldn't for the life of me. This guy, like nothing, nothing. And then finally, I was like, "Well, clearly you don't have use any media at all. Like,
right.
like nothing, not even sports." And he's like, "I watch sports." I'm like, "Great." I was in a Sprint commercial with a hamster, and he's like, "That's it!"
Oh,
and I was
God.
Like, "Give me my passport!"
We were entering the UK from France over in May. We've been in Italy, then we went to France, and we were at the train station getting ready to go on the tunnel, and this British customs agent, or, you know, immigration agent, was like, "Oh, what do you do?" And I go, "Oh, I work on television." What have I seen you in?
Yeah.
"Oh, I don't know. I work on this show. I do the show called Talking Dead. It's after The Walking Dead." He was like, "Oh, I quit watching that a couple seasons ago."
Right.
And then he started to get upset. Like, I thought I was going to get let into the country because he was no longer a fan of The Walking Dead and I was associated
yes.
with the show. And because he was like, it was that sort of, I couldn't tell if it was dry British humor. And he's like, "So it's your fault then that the shows." And I'm like, "I don't, I
yeah.
just host the," and I
yes.
find myself like defending my job and defending The Walking Dead.
I know. And now you're like put in this weird position where you're like, "I don't actually care that much." But like now I have to, like I'm the ass if I, yeah, I don't like prove to them. Because like,
they can arrest you for any reason.
Anything.
They can just like detain you if they feel like it.
They
and
can
so,
just decide. And if you've seen those people sitting in those couches behind the glass wall at the airport, like that is not where you want to be.
This person ruined Game of Thrones. This
yeah,
person
yeah.
is just like
I know.
Other shows.
I know. I'm sorry I got killed in that movie. Like, I'm sorry I was your favorite character and they killed me. Like, I apologize.
Because, you know, as a performer, I'm involved in all of these meetings.
Right.
And
yes.
I get to decide.
I have final say on the script and casting. And, like, why did they make that guy your husband? Like,
You know, the first question I always ask is, is there a way to make this piss off a customs agent? And
right.
if there is, we
yeah.
should implement it.
Yes.
Because I want to make it very
yeah.
challenging to get
when
into
I'm
other countries and back home.
Because traveling isn't a pain in the ass enough. I always got to, and thankfully not as much anymore, like, how come you don't want to be the lead?
Oh, no.
like you know, I've thought a lot about it. And I've compared paychecks and like lifestyle and just like freedom to choose roles and who I work with and like stretching myself as an artist. And I decided, no, I don't want to be the lead. I
yeah.
always want to support.
And it's also helped me foster a lot of awkward conversations
yeah,
that I had wanted to have before.
Totally. Like if I was the lead, I wouldn't be talking to you. I would already be through this line. They would have whisked me to the front.
I'd be at
yes.
I'd be at Famous Target. I wouldn't
totally.
Be, I wouldn't
I would be at
the
Famous Target at the Brentwood Country Market.
That is so funny because it is. I know people's intention is to say like,
"I know,
hey, I care about you, and I think this is." But it's the same as when people go, "Hey, do you not feel good? Because you look kind of sick."
You're like, "Are you okay?"
No one that doesn't. No one has ever benefited from that question from a stranger.
I know. I think like that or why. You're so pretty in person. Like, thank you.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you so much. I did once, I mean, I've had people say, like, why did, like, you let them make you look so ugly? Or, like,
what?
I'm like, I didn't think I did. Like,
people
like,
don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just,
it's a girl thing, probably.
I think it's a TV thing.
Oh.
I think when you're on TV, you know, you're in people's, I mean,
you're
know,
smaller.
And used to be. TV, I think TV people are more approachable because we play like you know, especially if you do a lot of comedy, you're very approachable. You do you play a lot of people, a lot of different people, and people just feel like they know you.
I know.
So they can say to you like, "Oh, what's
like? Yeah, what? You're actually like an attractive person."
And then you're inside. You I'm just like, feel like, "Oh, I'm gonna go recover from that."
I know. I didn't think you'd be tall, which isn't that bad. But I'm like, yeah. The one class I took in college that wasn't related to acting was a media class, so I guess it kind of was. But like, it wasn't in the acting school, and that was like the weird thing I learned. I remember so specifically about like the difference between television and movies. And I was just a college kid. I didn't even think I would be an actor at this point, but I was like, that they said that like the people in your living room, it's totally different when they're in your living room than when you see them like seven times as big as they're supposed to be on a giant movie screen. Mm-hmm. And like now things are changing because we all have like screening rooms and giant televisions and like people just like don't go to the movies as much as they used to.
Right.
But I thought that was like really interesting because it's true. Like you see a movie star, you're like, oh my God.
Right.
But you see like, you know, David Schwimmer and you're like, oh my God. Like, I mean, I love Dave, so I'm like, but you know what I mean? Like you do see the people as being more familiar.
Yeah. But I also think that, again, I think the intentions are always good. It's like no one intends to
unless
bum you
you're
out of-
responsible for the downfall of The Walking Dead, in which case
that's right. As the person who hosts the after show, who's really not involved in any of those high level meetings, but you know, you'll take responsibility for it because you're the closest thing that they have to it.
Yeah.
The good news is we did make it into England, but I never got a wink from the guy. Like I was just fucking around. Like it really I couldn't tell. You know, there is that line of British humor where it's like. Dry or real? Who knows? Yeah. Who knows just where this to is going to go?
It could be peaches. You don't know.
We just don't know. Did you specifically study comedy?
I didn't study comedy.
Because your timing is flawless.
I don't know why. I don't know where that's from. But my parents will both tell you it's from them. I don't totally agree with that and can say that because I don't think they know what a podcast is. So
that's right. They're not going to listen to it and challenge you.
I just got them Netflix and they were like, I mean, they love it. I'm like, guys.
There's a whole world out there.
I said, you guys have Netflix? And they were like, no, we don't have it. I was like, but I thought we got you a smart TV. They're like, yeah, but we don't have Netflix. I'm like, it should just be on the TV.
That's why it's smart.
Yeah. So I went and I like was visiting them in Ohio and there's the button that says Netflix like right on their thing. So I pushed it and signed in and now they have Netflix. And we're talking about my awesome comedic timing though, not my parents and their Netflix account. But I don't know why. I didn't study comedy. I just studied acting, regular old acting to be on the stage. I don't know. That's just, I don't know.
And your mom was a former nun?
She was a nun. She loved the Lord most of all and married him and then got a divorce from the Lord and then married my dad. And
boy, that's a
she gets so mad.
That's an
mad
intense ex-husband.
Like, yeah, but technically dad's really your second husband.
I mean, let's be honest.
You did marry Jesus first. And she's like, don't say that. Like, it's true. There's a picture of you, like, face down on the floor in the church, dude.
I mean, is it? How does one un-nun themselves?
I don't remember how she, like, legally, how do you legally divorce yourself from God? I know she just got asked to leave the convent by her mother's superior because they thought she was wild.
What?
No. She was, like, kind of a wild lady. My mom describes it, that they said she would be better to serve the Lord in a more secular environment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I guess how that's happened. So she doesn't find, like, a divorce attorney.
Not at the time, although, you know, the church is changing and they all need attorneys now, no matter what. So if you're going to be Catholic these days, it's not a bad idea to just have a good attorney just in case. Because honestly, like,
who knows?
We all go to mass with attorneys now just
in case. Just in case. You just see, I'm on the crucifix, Jesus' hand has like these papers in him. And it's like, okay, he touched them.
Yeah.
He's been served.
Yeah,
he's been absolutely served. That's funny. And do your mom, does she ever talk fondly about it? Or is she like, yeah, you know, it was just a period of my life and it ended and, you know, whatever.
She does. But like it's really sweet, actually. She talks about how because she was in high school and then so she was there for 8 years. So she did like her high school in the convent and then did the nunning thing and then was a nun for 4 years before she left. And then she says like she doesn't feel she never like heard a calling, which is what you hear. Mm-hmm. She kind of, she did it out of personal reasons, but sure. She felt like good because she said, I gave my best years to the Lord, which I'm like, your sluttiest years is like really what you're saying when you think about it, Mom. And she's
yeah, that
like,
would have been 18 to 22, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she's always like, no, it was a really good time. She's still friends with a lot of her nun mates.
Oh, that's so nice. Yes.
So like those are all still her really close girlfriends, and like some of them stayed nuns and some didn't, and like, you know, they roll around and talk about the old days.
Oh, that's so funny.
And then she got to do what she always wanted to do her whole life, was go to nursing school.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, because the story is so weird now, but she was shot. Her brother shot her by accident.
What the fuck?
Look, the story was weird back then, too.
That is not, of all the things I could have predicted, that was going to come out of
Yeah, so he shot her by accident.
Sure, of
and
course, yeah, it happens.
She had to go. Does happen, but we won't get into that.
No.
But, so she had to go to the hospital because she got shot, like next to her heart. And when she was in the hospital, I think she was like 11 or something. She like fell in love with all the nurses. She was like, the doctors like come and go like once a day, but the nurses do everything, and they took care of me, and they were so great. And then she just said, I always wanted to be a nurse. So when she came home from the convent and her dad was like, well, what do you want to do? She's like, I want to go to nursing school, and I know we can't afford it. And he said, I'll figure it out. And he did.
That's amazing. So she just wanted to serve people in some way.
Yeah.
And nursing, I mean, nursing should be a super high paid job, because a regular day in a nurse's life would be the worst day of anyone else's.
Yeah. No life, one can do
what
that.
What they see and what they go through.
Yeah. I mean, she worked in all different parts of the hospital, and she really loved it. And then she kind of worked her way up within like the business world of hospitals, but weirdly, like, she loved nursing so much. So even when she was like a fancy hospital administrator, she would like nurse on the weekends, one weekend a month, like with this like agency like somewhere else, because she's like, I miss nursing and I love nursing and helping people. And so she couldn't do it at her hospital, obviously, because she's like the boss, but she would go to other places and nurse people.
And so how did an ex-nun nurse affect your upbringing? Was it particularly religious, or was it particularly sheltered because she was a nurse, or did that make her less
Well,
sheltering.
It's like, no, I mean, you know, the thing like the cobbler's children have no shoes. Like,
right.
I could have cut my arm off and she'd be like, you'll be fine. like, I really feel like I'm in a lot of pain right now. There
nope,
was a lot
nope.
of, just, no, you're
it's
okay.
Not, it's like
you're
somatic.
Okay. Yeah,
it's
no,
not,
it's fine.
It's not real.
If you want to go, just go to the ER. Just go to the hospital and go to the ER. I'll call
but
them.
But you're
tell
a nurse.
I know. I'm like, I'll call them and tell them you're on the way. I'm like, I'd rather you take me, weirdly. She, very religious still to this day. My parents are very religious, but they're more like Christian than Catholic now. Mm-hmm. And then the nursing thing, she always influenced me more like to be a person who is good at business. Like, she's really smart and she was always really driven, and she could never ever stop, like ever stop. Like, she's always going to school. She's always like, the opioid crisis came up and she's like been taking classes at a local community college about like drugs and rehabilitation.
Oh my gosh.
And she's just like curious about like why this is happening and like what can be done. I mean, you know, it's interesting. So she didn't feel like she wanted to nurse anymore. So then she started working for those companies that hire you to like take care of your aging parent, mm-hmm. you know? So she's like kind of like a old person babysitter.
Yep.
But because she was in her 60s and 70s doing it, like they all loved her because it wasn't like some young kid coming in and just like sitting and texting. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, she's like watching Wheel of Fortune with them in Jeopardy. And, like, yeah.
That's
like,
really this, sweet.
Yeah. And then, of course, like, her being a nurse is nice for them because they feel like safe, like if something does happen. Like,
right.
But yeah, she is always trying to keep her mind really sharp, which I have been inspired by.
And because it sounds like your parents do have a sense of humor. So have you been in anything that you've been like, you know, maybe you don't need to watch this one?
Oh, yeah. They don't like to watch anything where I show my boobs, which
sure.
I can't really blame them. So they haven't seen, they don't watch that. They don't watch Kidding, which I'm on currently shooting.
Right.
I'm really super proud of it. Definitely don't watch that one, guys. definitely, like, basically, like, anything I genuinely love, like, that I, like, I'm so proud of, some things they just don't, like, really want
anything
to see.
Anything that plays a little too dark.
anything dark or, yeah. And then they don't watch Archer, which we're like about to do our 11th season
of that.
That's
unbelievable.
I know. It's so crazy. And they don't get it, which I understand. Like, it's not.
Right.
But they have like a giant, like, from the movie theater poster framed in their living room of Marmaduke, which, like... Not one of my favorite movies I've ever been in. Not the one that I say. Although if my husband's with me and someone's like, what do I know you from? He's always like, Marmaduke. And I'm like, you can go fuck yourself.
Marriage.
He will never not say Marmaduke.
Has anyone said, oh yeah, that's it?
No. No one. No one. My dry cleaner's son liked it for a minute. So I brought in the DVD they send you when you're in a movie. And they're like, here's your DVD. That's in your contract that they have to give you. I'm like, whoever is like, don't forget to send me my DVD, guys.
Hey, where's that Marmaduke DVD? It's in the contract, guys.
You have not sent it yet.
You're hearing my lawyer. The lawyer shows up. It's a whole. You spend $100,000 in legal fees
to get my free DVD. To get your free DVD so that I can send it to my parents.
Like, well, now they have Netflix.
I know they do.
So you know what?
I probably don't even have Marmaduke on Netflix.
It all comes back around. It's totally fine. I watched Driven last night, by the way.
Oh my God,
and it's
fucking
great.
Isn't it great?
And you're great in it.
Oh, thank you.
It's really, and it was funny, my wife and I were watching, she was like, oh my God, I recently watched the John DeLorean documentary.
Ooh, yeah.
And she said, you have to, and I'm somewhat familiar with the story. I know it's a famous entrapment case, but I didn't,
yes.
I don't think I realized how fucked up it was, but my question is, obviously, without talking specifics, so no spoilers are given away, how much story liberty did they take? Because there's stuff that happens in the movie where, like, oh, did that happen, or was that just like a thing that they wrote in as a clever?
It's hard to know because my character and Sudeikis's character and our kids went into witness protection,
and no one has ever heard from them,
like,
again.
Into thin air,
yeah,
like totally, and. There was nothing. There was no... they tried. There was nothing. Like, no way to find them. No way to get information from them. Like, nothing. So it's hard to know. Like, what... Like, they... The screenwriter, you know, like, put together the facts, wrote the screenplay. They tried to... I mean, maybe when it comes out, they'll be like, guys. But no, it was hard to really find out. So we can't, like, we can, like, facts-wise. But, you know, some liberties were taken.
Yeah.
But because we could. Because there was no one there being like, no, my hair wasn't that long.
Right. Well, there's particularly, like, the way that the movie ends.
Yeah.
Is a, and again, I don't want to get into it because I don't want people to.
I was like.
Oh, it did that. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
I know. It's cool. It was like, yeah, there's... I was really excited when I read that script, and also that they often don't write, like, the wife character very well. You might not know that.
I don't.
No one ever talks about it these days.
You should talk about it.
How underwritten female characters are. Like, but this one was so great, and I thought she was so strong and so interesting, and I liked that. Like, she was smart. She knew what was going on, and she knew what to, like, ask questions about and what not to ask questions about.
Right.
But she was, like, at the end of the day, like, a stand-by-her-man kind of lady. Like, and I really liked it. I thought she was cool, and I thought that the story was really sexy and really fun. And, like, I grew up loving DeLoreans. I mean, I don't know. I just thought they were, like, aspirational. Like, maybe that's what our Teslas are today. Although, I don't know. There's just something about the DeLorean, and there's a line he has in the movie where he says it's not a car, it's a DeLorean. And I'm
right.
Like, it isn't. It's a DeLorean. And even last week driving, I was like stopped at the intersection at like Sunset and Vine, and there was a DeLorean at the intersection and people were taking pictures of it. Like,
yeah.
To this day, like, it's a thing.
Because of Back to the Future. And,
yeah.
And he, I was reading that DeLorean actually sent Bob Gale a note and thanked him for, because, you know.
Otherwise, yes.
Yeah, because he... You know, I don't know what his day-to-day life was like, but I know that he defended himself successfully against, like, 40 lawsuits.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm sure that was a nice, that would have been a nice boost for him in 1985 after having, you know,
gone through everything. Yeah, his life torn apart.
Yeah, but the DeLorean to me is kind of an interesting metaphor for life because it's such a cool looking car. It's like the coolest people and things tend to be the most the coolest looking things tend to be the most fucked up inside.
Yes. Yeah.
Because I did the Jay Leno Garage Show and did a DeLorean. We drove the DeLorean.
They're not.
They don't. Like, great. I couldn't get the car into reverse. He actually had to get out of the car and push
you.
Yeah, because it was. I could not.
I mean, I'm going to just defend the car right now say that, you know, they didn't really have an opportunity to, like, work on all the. Troubleshoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I think that's why when we see our DeLoreans and if we ever get a chance to drive one, we're like, this isn't that great. But he never got a chance to go in and.
He
fix
didn't.
It.
And also, they're very old at this
they're
point.
They're so
too.
Old. And it's not like you can get replacement parts everywhere.
No. No.
I stand by that car.
I'm sure there are landfills in Ireland where you can go find some.
And you're like,
you can dig
you're like,
up.
Oh,
it's a carburetor. Okay, good.
Yes.
I need this. Yeah,
totally
I need this.
That.
Yeah, but it is a fun story, and I mean, it's a fun fucked up story. Mm-hmm. But the movie's great because it rides this line between like fun and it's almost comedic in places, but at the same time. It's just like the undertone is just, it's just really messed up. The whole thing is really messed up. And I do think it's interesting that you and Sudeikis' characters are really, it's kind of like, I don't want to say like a questionable protagonist, but they're protagonists. Like you do feel for them and you do empathize with them. But it's just, again, it's hard to know because in the real story, was that guy empathetic to the DeLorean plight in any way? He did have a criminal record. It was sort of weird, or
I think the casting of Jason was so smart because he is so, like, you do love him and you do feel for him and you do see him as like an everyday guy in this role, and like, and so if you cast someone who is more arch, like an actor who like isn't so likable,
right,
I think that you would feel differently, you know? Like, you would think, like, this guy is kind of a dick and he's kind of, like, just out for himself.
Yeah.
But I do feel like he and Lee Pace, who plays John DeLorean, like, I feel like they have a real connection and they have real chemistry on screen. Mm-hmm. And so I found myself watching it for the first time when I saw it, like, more confused than when we were shooting the movie, because I'm watching the story all put together and I'm like, why would you do that to your friend? But this guy is, like, you know, then it's also him and his family at the end of the day.
Right.
Like, what are you really going to do?
Right.
And it's interesting that he, like, ends up, like, yeah, turning on his friend. But, like, he has no choice. I don't know. It all seemed like it made more sense, like, all put together. Because sometimes I'm like, are we just using them? But there's this great speech Jason has in the movie about, like, he's got so much. Like, they have so much.
Mm-hmm.
And you feel that angst, and it's weirdly kind of like timely right now where we're talking about like the middle class disappearing and just like, you know, everything that's going on politically right now in our country, and like it's getting just more and more divided, and you can see that like feeling of frustration of like, why do I have to look at that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why that? Why do they get that and I don't get that?
Right.
And in this case, he had to turn him in. He had to like squeal on him in order to get his family out. But,
right.
Like at the same time, you know, and honestly, like hiding from that cocaine dealer, not really hiding from like DeLorean, but like all this stuff, it's like, I don't know, it kind of works right now. And I felt the frustration when I watched that scene in the movie, like him just feeling so like, I mean, look, he's not like doing things illegal and not making it, but you can see that frustration and like that people feel that way.
Yeah. And also, first of all, Michael Cudlitz, former Walking Dead's Michael Cudlitz.
An actor you probably hate since you hate the show and sabotaged the last three seasons of it. That must have been hard for you to watch.
It's really hard for me to watch. I was like, I tried as part of Talking Dead to tank this show. And here he is being great in a movie. What the fuck do I need to do?
Not what I signed up for.
Not at all. Even though they've started airing our show after another show in between Walking Dead and Talking Dead, I still... What the fuck does a guy need to do? God damn it, Cudlitz.
I mean, he's so good in
He's amazing.
Movie.
He's amazing in it.
I know.
But it's... Listen, maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I almost see a parallel. Like, Jason's character is... in a way, almost a DeLorean. Like, he's this kind of like, he's got this really cool exterior, but inside he's just conflict and fucked up and broken and, yeah, and doing the best he can, but still just can't seem to. But you even, but your character even says to him, like, you're all, it's, there's always like one more thing. There's always a promise. You're always making promises. And he really, like, they do really do, in the movie at least, have the best intentions and just can't seem to.
Can't get it right.
Can't get it right.
And how, I mean, like, we all know one or more people like that. You're like, why? Why didn't you just take that job?
Right.
Or like, why did you quit that job? Like, I know that you didn't like working at the deli counter. I always think of the wrestler. And like, remember how he's like doing so good? And he's like cutting the meat at the meat counter. And that like, then he just like blows up. And he like, people like just can't get on track sometimes.
I can't. It's hard for me to watch stuff like that because I just I just feel the no.
I know.
That's, it was like, fine.
Like, you were going to be okay. Like, why did you do it?
Yeah, and this isn't a big spoiler because I'm sure that maybe this is probably something that people know, but even when, even before DeLorean goes into the trap and he gets a call and they're like, okay, we've raised
that. We figured it out.
And he's
come
like,
home.
No, but then I won't own it, so I don't want. And you're like,
yeah, I know. You don't, it's like that.
That's
that
not a spoiler because that's history, guys.
That's that happened. It's, yeah, I know. It's so frustrating watching people like throw away, like, the opportunity to, like, do the right thing.
I know, but don't you feel like we get so focused and obsessed for the wrong things? And these are usually ego-based things.
Mm-hmm.
That it, because they're very seductive.
Mm-hmm.
Because the ego needs its, you know, its a certain amount of stroking and stoking. And that, you know, how do we know when we're about to make a bad ego decision?
We have to make a movie about it and then see what the audience says. I don't know. I mean, how? Oh, I don't know. I don't think this necessarily ties in, but do you know those, like, crazy people that always have crazy things happen to them? And you're like, how could so many crazy things happen to one person?
Yeah.
And then you realize when you get older, like, oh, because that's a crazy person.
Right, right, right.
And, like, crazy things happen to crazy people.
Well, it does. I mean, I do think, obviously, some things can just blindside people.
Yeah.
A medical diagnosis,
yes,
or someone
yes.
dies, or they get fired out of thin air, or whatever.
Yes.
But I do think more than most people are willing to realize that, you know, like, when crazy things happen, it's like people do make some micro choices throughout
yes,
the day
yes.
that they may not even realize because they're sort of
on, micro choices
yeah.
throughout the day.
They're just sort of on autopilot.
Can that be a new podcast? Micro choices throughout the day. It's a short episode.
It's a very short. You're just like
micro choices.
Oh,
yes, yes,
yeah.
that lead you to the thing where
yeah.
you're like your ego won't let you say no or like
yeah.
pride or something. It's
yeah.
like. I don't know. I wasn't raised that way, but I know people who are like that, and it's just so frustrating to watch them, like, over and over. And
are you still
like,
doing – do you still do TM?
Yes,
it's
I did it
best.
This morning.
I know, me too. It's the best.
I'm on a – I'm trying to get I was not awesome at it for a minute, and mm-hmm. then I've been working on Kidding, this show I do on Showtime, and my co-star Justin Kirk does it, and he's been like religious twice a day, and I was like, okay, that's like, you know, you just like need to like run into that person.
Yes.
No, it's so great. But I think if you do TM that you would not probably sell out your friend in a big cocaine deal. That's just to tie it all together. I feel like most people who meditate, who do transcendental meditation, like aren't, you know, like setting up people to fail. But maybe I'm wrong.
Maybe they do. I don't know. Who knows?
Maybe they're just like cooler about it.
Well, I do. But I do think it does, like in its perfect form, it should give you a little bit of space.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of space from the ego,
yeah,
and then
yeah.
you're not necessarily chasing all that stuff. But I do think, particularly in this family's case,
yes,
it's the people who – it's sort of like when you're, I don't know, at a blackjack table or whatever, and you're like, fuck, I've had like 5 losing hands in a row. It's bound to turn around. And then you start like doubling your losses to try to make back. And then at a certain point, the margin between –
yes.
Then it's just like, oh, there's no way now.
Yeah.
Exponentially, there's just too much space in between these two things.
I'm so glad I never got into gambling. Your story, this is stressing me out so much. Like, the idea of what you're talking about.
Oh, no, I hate gambling.
Oh, my God, it seems so awful.
Yeah, I realized.
Having to count so quickly on top of it.
You know, like years and years and years ago when I quit drinking and I went back to Vegas and played some blackjack, I was like, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
Because I became acutely aware of every beat of it. And like, I just lost $400 that I didn't need to lose.
Yeah.
That didn't feel
and
good at all.
So fast.
Yeah, so fast.
So fast. I know. I could see totally wanting to get it back. Ugh.
But that's, but I think at a certain point it is sort of good to like, well, all right, let's just try a new thing. Cut the losses, not keep, you know, pounding our heads. But where do you think the dividing line between, you know, persistence and then also like recognizing that you might need to take a new path is?
I don't know. I mean, like, not to be too hippy-dippy, but I think that's where meditation is really helpful. I remember, like, reading Susie Orman's book. She wrote, she had this book where, she was talking about the housing market in 2008 when, like, everything went to shit and, like, people just, like, tried more than anything to hang on to their houses. Like, that's all they wanted was to hang on to their house. And she gave advice. She was like, don't hang on to your house. Get rid of your house. Start over. Get an apartment. You don't need a house. Mm-hmm. And I remember hearing that thinking, like, but that's the American dream is to own your house. And if you're going to lose your house, like, you'll do anything to keep your house. It's like people became so house poor and so crazy over keeping their house.
Right.
And I think about that sometimes because I'm like, yeah, at some point you have to just cut your losses. You have to just say like, okay, I'm done.
Yeah.
Like, I'm done fighting for this thing. And like, I'm going to now go do this other thing. I don't know when you decide to do that. But like, I think that's when you meditate, you kind of like stuff starts to become like a little bit clearer. Or at least you can like slow down in a moment and be like, this is not serving me.
Well, you know, and I think it's also hard too, because when people feel like something's being taken away from them, then they feel like they're not in control. So they try to do the only thing they can to sort of feel like they're still in control of something, which is like, hold on to this thing, hold on to this idea, or hold on to this house or whatever it is. Even when it's a fucking anchor.
I remember working also with a writer once who told me he had so many friends that were trying, this was years and years ago, he had so many friends that were trying to be actors, like we all do. And he said the worst thing that can ever happen with his friends, this kind of broke my heart, but I also understood where he was coming from, was when they get those like guest starring roles.
Mm-hmm.
And like they would work like once a year, like, guesting on some television show, and then it would like reinvigorate like their commitment to. And he's like, I've seen people like years and years and years, they've like stayed in this business like trying to be actors, thinking that like that can get them like, oh, but I guessed it on this thing, so now like I'm not gonna give up, I'm gonna keep doing it. And he's like, it's so hard to watch like all the years go by and that's it. And like, at what point with any career, like, do you say like, nope, I am.
Well, I think it just depends on what you want out of it. You know what I mean?
And how happy you are.
Yes, exactly. I mean, if you, you know, if the pursuit of that, if you're sacrificing joy, relationships, happiness.
Yeah, kind of like an addiction.
Yes,
it's like
exactly.
Getting in the way of like your life.
Yeah.
Then I don't know.
But if you can do it and have a healthy, and it's like with anything, if you can do it and have a healthy balance with it where it's like, I love doing this thing, I'm passionate about it, I, you know, I'm still going to figure out a way to do it, and the pursuit of it, the process of it, still brings you joy, then I think it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't, you know, like, working on 100 things a year, one thing a year, is that's kind of like results oriented. And it's like, it may not, if the person is still happy in the process, then it's worth it. But if they're like, doing it at the expense of the rest of their life, then maybe it's like, okay, maybe kind of with holding onto a house.
And it's
maybe
so hard
we should
to see from the outside too.
And it is.
Like, unless you're inside of it. Let's talk about more funny stuff. It's getting sad.
Did you know 20,000 people a year die every day? Wait, what?
Catholic Church, the housing crisis of 2008. What else did we cover? Failing careers in the arts.
That is where comedy comes from. Comedy comes from tragedy.
The masks.
Comedy comes
from
darkness.
I have the tattoo on my hip. Just kidding. I don't. But so many people do.
So what are you working on now that you're super excited about besides Kidding? Is Kidding kind of taking up the lion's share of
Kidding
your time?
Kidding is my summer. That's what I'm doing and I still love it and it's so great. And like, we're doing such crazy things this season. We had Ariana Grande on our episode and like,
she's really funny, by the way.
She's so good. And,
yeah.
And like watching her sing and like, you're like, like it's sort of breathtaking. That was cool. But also just like the scripts have been so amazing and so out there. And I love that. And I'm really excited for Driven to come out because we have, you know, like another exciting, fun, happy topic is Hurricane Maria. And so I'm really happy for this movie because I think the movie kicks ass, but also because we shot it like right after the hurricane. So like a lot of us were, I mean, none of us took days off. Like if we weren't working, we were like out like volunteering and like,
that's
like
really nice.
Packing boxes. I went out like with this organization called the International Medical Corps, which is fucking amazing organization. They like like are ninjas. They come in like immediately into natural disasters and war zones, and they are still in Puerto Rico now, and they hand out food. They're now helping a lot in Puerto Rico with mental wellness, because a lot of people are having like a lot of PTSD.
Of course they are.
Obviously. So, but they come in, they help with like medicine, water, food. So I was like rolling around with them a little bit. And then I helped to rescue some dogs while I was there with the Puerto Rico Dog Fund.
That's a feel good, happy thing.
It was good, except for like I was able to get this one. There were these cargo planes that were coming in with supplies and then leaving, obviously. So we would just try to get as many dogs as we could on these planes back to the States. And at the time, because of the hurricane, like my husband couldn't come visit me on the movie. And then he got like salty because I was able to like get dogs. I could buy him a ticket to Puerto Rico, but there were no tickets out of Puerto Rico. So I was like, I'm sorry, babe, like you can't come visit on this one. And he's like, you're getting dogs on airplanes and like you can't get me on an airplane. And I'm like, no, I can't.
Do dress up like a dog. I can get you out of here.
Go into a kennel for the flight to Miami, I guess. I know. But that was cool. Then a bunch of us like went and packed boxes. They were like helicoptering down food and supplies like into the mountains, and so we were packing boxes of that stuff, and like we all found stuff to do on our days off while we were there, which was really cool. And another reason I'm so in love with this movie, because so much more than just like making the movie, it felt like it took on a whole other life once, you know, the hurricane happened. And it was like we, you know, were able to keep people working. We were like doing their laundry. We were like giving them, like Tara Summers, who's in the movie with us, she brought like 3,000 of these like solar powered lamps that people didn't have power. They didn't have gas. Like it was crazy. It was a really, it was something I'll hopefully never forget.
Because then I imagine in those moments and you're like, oh yeah, I guess I live in kind of a wonderland.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Day to day.
I'm hungry. Let's Postmates creation. Like.
What do you mean they don't have that salmon dish anymore?
Oh, my God. Newsroom? Like, that was so good. Like, yeah. I was like.
I know you guys are having a rough time, but yeah. I get it. Because when the newsroom shut down, they changed their menu. I don't even think you understand.
Awful. Like, I mean, it's awful. Do you know how long it took my Lyft to come and pick me up yesterday? Like 3 minutes. And I hate how when you're touching the app, it like tells you it's 2 minutes away, but really it's like 6 minutes away when you actually confirm the pickup. Like, that's bullshit. Like, it shouldn't tell you it's 3 minutes if it's not 3 minutes.
Take a lamp.
Guys. Guys. Do you want a lamp? I mean,
it's almost not a bit.
I know. It's really close to not being a bit.
It's real close to not being a bit around this area sometimes.
I know.
But I think that's why it's important to just see what real life is like, mm-hmm. and get out of this bizarre facade hall of mirrors.
It really, you know, that is, we live so in. It's one of the things I love about what we do is going like traveling, like going away. Like I argue always to keep production in Los Angeles because I want everyone here to like have jobs, and like we are an industry town that then often doesn't make our own product. Mm-hmm. But there is something so great about getting out of Los Angeles and New York too, where you get to like live where people live and see what like the world is really like, and like what people are like, and stand in line, and all those things. Like, it's good for us. It's good. It makes your character stronger. It makes your choices more interesting. And it just gives you like more to draw on as an artist, I think, right? Like,
well, yeah, because again, this business, more than most businesses, is all just stoking the ego, you know, because we're trying so hard to figure out if we're doing a good job or successful or getting the attention to fill a hole. Yeah. How many likes? And so it's so important to remember, like, my wife was an ambassador for Operation Smile, and she would go on missions, and they would do, you know, and she's, it's been a few years, and she's been saying to me pretty regularly, she was like, I need to go, you know, we need to go do this. We need to, like, my soul needs to go do this. Yeah. And she's right. And it's vital, because the stuff we get to do is you know, yes, it's important to entertain people and it's fun, you know, but it's not like life
right.
stuff that most people are dealing with.
I know. It's really nothing at all like what most people are dealing with. I feel like it's so great. I love Operation Smile. It's so awesome.
Yeah, yeah. That's, it's pretty,
like,
great.
It's such a gift. Like, people don't under, like, I don't even know if you understand, like, what it's like to be born that way and have, like, no one take it seriously or give you the help that you need because they can't afford it.
And like, there is something that they can do about it.
Yeah, there is. Like, and it's, if you have the right person there, it's not that difficult. Like, right. It can be fixed. It's
and
like,
literally life-changing.
Life-changing. I mean, even just, like, food not going, like,
right.
Like, it's crazy. Right. I mean, I went to a luncheon. So I'm pretty well-versed in
you know all the, you know the score.
I'm pretty into it. Yeah. So, anyway, that's awesome she does that.
And also, by the way, I just remember the first time I met you, was it real time? Probably like five yes. years ago. And I didn't realize that your husband was a producer on the show.
He still is, yeah.
Fantastic.
He's in it to win it. Yeah, he's he is still there. And yeah, it's so cool.
Well, you were very nice to me at the time. I mean, like, I'm always surprised that... I whatever.
That was a mistake. I should never...
Can I take that back? I'm going to take that back. Take that back.
I didn't mean to. I thought you were someone else.
I thought you were Charlie Day.
You thought I was Anne Heche. we had the best conversation. Charlie Day and Anne Heche had the best conversation that night at Real Time.
We, just for fun, we should post videos and then just tag it as Charlie Day and Anne yeah. Heche having conversations and then just never let and just never acknowledge yeah. that we're not them.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fantastic.
Oh, it's okay because I thought you were, yeah, totally.
Do you ever just go along with it? Yes, I'm in.
Oh, one time, yes, I was in a furniture store and I was this man came up to me and he was crying and this was years ago, but he said, like, I have to just, I'm so sorry, I'm so emotional. Your performance in the movie Magnolia changed my life.
Oh no, he's so emotionally vulnerable. What are you supposed to do?
You say thank you.
Yeah, of
and
course.
You usher him out of the store and hope he doesn't give you a better look, because I think he thinks I was Melora Walters, and I was like, oh yeah, I'm not gonna like be like, nah, that wasn't me.
Get away, that wasn't me.
What an ass.
Here's no, my resume. Yeah, do you see yeah. the word Magnolia? Just
I mean,
go to IMDb.
I'd love to work with him, but no, yeah, no. I was just like, oh my gosh, thank you so much. That's so sweet.
That's the one time where you, yeah, you really, yeah.
Just wanted to let him have that. I'm a giver.
What are you doing in, like, what is something, in, as we're sort of winding this down, what's something you're particularly joyful about? Like, where do you, like, what do you do to sort of, besides TM, what do you do for joy, or is there a place you go, or something you read, or something you do?
Well, I love knitting.
Nice! Nice.
I love knitting, and I started a knitting group, and so we knit together when we all can, and that's really fun. I don't know. I really like it. I was knitting these hats. There's this Lion Brand Yarn started this like Hat Not Hate campaign where they're like teaming up with Box Out Bullying, I believe it is, and then like October is Anti-Bullying Month, so this bullying organization or this pro bullying.
It's not pro
bowling. Yes, I thought it was pro bowling. Wait, what?
What's all this knitting?
Yeah. We knit these blue hats and then we're passing them out. I mean, I'm not personally going to pass them out.
The hats say Target the Week.
Yeah.
I don't, it's a weird.
Pull it over your eyes and you won't see it coming. It won't be as scary. Yeah, the hats are going to be passed out during like assemblies and schools.
Oh, that's
and
nice.
Stuff, like during like this anti-bullying month. So I've been trying to do that, which makes me happy. But I've been knitting a lot of blue hats, and mm-hmm. I'm ready to like not knit a blue hat.
Can I make a request?
Yes.
Would you, because you know you can see that the mic stands. You know they leave these kind of circles.
You'd like
on the thing.
Some little doilies?
Well, a doily, or can you knit me like a knitted almost like cover for this?
Like a koozie?
Yes.
Like a okay.
I mean, I don't know.
I
listen,
I
don't want to. I'm not trying to assign you a task, but if you wanted to. I would pay handsomely for it and be forever in your debt.
I will have my lawyer reach out to your lawyer about a fee.
It takes a year and a half to do all the paperwork.
Yeah.
We might need to get it done.
It'll be great. They'll
why is the
10%.
Term in perpetuity? And we're just trying to...
A fucking doily. No, it's not. It's not. It's actually different.
It's my art.
It's my art.
It's my fucking art.
Okay, I think I can figure out the measurements here.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
This is super high tech. No one knows what I'm doing, but I'm using.
She's
my
measuring
finger.
With her finger. She's because actually.
Why is that so dumb? That maybe. She's measuring with Hi, I'm 15 years old.
But it works because the radius of this is about a finger length. And depth of it is almost like fingernail.
Yeah. So it's like up to my knuckle. Oh,
it's up to the first little knuckle there.
Yeah.
Yeah. There fantastic. You go. Please. You know, I'm going to cut out the part where we talk about
measuring with my finger.
And then just like not, and then have people try to figure out what it is that we're talking about. What are they talking about?
What are they doing?
And then at the end, we'll reveal, we're making doilies!
What?
Whee! Well, I hope you have a wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you.
And I hope the rest of
I'm setting myself up to succeed. I've done all the things that I could in my power to
all do. Your micro choices are pointing to...
All my micro choices today
are pointing to a positive result. Yeah, it's all going to be good. Hey, you know what? This is a pretty great fucking day. I got to be honest.
I'm going to kill it today. So far, so awesome.
So far, so awesome. It's also a great name for a podcast. And it's just all that's so far so awesome is all of the bad micro choices that you make throughout the day. That's the title. That's the title right there. Well, please tell your husband I said hello.
I will.
And
come
thank
back
you
to
so
the
much
show.
For I would love to. And thank you so much for coming on, Judy Greer. I am and have been a massive fan of your work for many many years. So it was a real
thank
pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks, Judy Greer.
Thank you.
The end.
I totally forgot to talk about this other movie I have.
Talk about it. The mics are still on.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, great. I have Where'd You Go, Bernadette? I'm in.
Oh,
that's
yes.
That's coming out also on Friday. I play a smaller supporting role, which I'm proud of. A lot of days to go antiquing in Pittsburgh.
Fantastic.
Well, I shot that movie. But I was excited about this because I love the book so much, as so many people did. But I actually like wrote an email to Richard Linklater and was like, can I be in this movie? Because you're directing it and I love the book. And he was like, yeah, totally. The only role I have left is the therapist. I'm like, I'll take it.
And that works? So, you can just email the...
It only works with Richard Linklater.
Okay, gotcha.
So I can give you all his email address.
Shoot him a note. Yeah. He's going to cast everyone.
Totally
lots of roles. Yeah, exactly. The fuck, he's going to wake up one day and go,
I know.
What the fuck?
Who did this?
Or he'll go, Judy, this was the best thing that's ever happened. I've discovered so much new talent.
Turn your frown upside down, man. So far, so awesome.
So far,
awesome.
So awesome.
Thank you for letting me talk about that. Really.
Absolutely. All right, great. That was the Eddie Tinty podcast number 1015. It is time for some word salad rap. Let's talk about stuff. I don't mean stuff like in the general sense. I mean like stuff like stuff, like physical stuff. I saw a pretty great quote today. I think it might have been on the Stoicism subreddit, but it was, he has the most who is content with the least, which is attributed to Diogenes. I probably should have looked that up. I'm sure that's right. I'm sure it's right. I hope it's right. Sounds like it might be right. But it is on the Stoicism subreddit. And it really struck a chord with me because, listen, if you listen to this podcast, it's a good chance you might be a collector. You know I'm a collector. You know I collect a lot of stuff. You know I have a lot of stuff. Stuff is fun to collect. And it's not even about the having. It's sort of the pursuit of it. You know, I post these Instagram stories all the time of going antiquing because it is my favorite thing to do when I go into a new city, besides finding the local donuts. But I just love it because antiques have such a... There's a story behind them. They, you know, they're usually very well crafted. They've been around for a long time. And I just like amassing them. You know, in addition to, we collect Disney props and horror props and animation cells and things like that. And I always feel like, well, it's not that I'm, you know, trying to define myself by these things or plant myself on them forever. I feel like I'm curating these things for a period in this time stream. And then eventually when I'm not here anymore, they will be scattered back out and hopefully other people will curate them for a time and care for them. And so I do understand the idea of accumulating stuff. But I also think there's a danger with being imprisoned by your stuff and weighed down by your stuff. And I often think of the junk lady from Labyrinth, who is the character who essentially encounters Sarah while while wandering in all of the rubbish and everything. And then they go into her room and like into a replica of a room, and the junk lady starts piling all of her stuff on her, and then she like basically shrugs it all off and then runs. But I think it's such an interesting metaphor for being too weighed down by stuff. And so it's fun to have stuff, but would you be okay without it? You know, would you be okay if you didn't have your stuff anymore? Does it define you so much that you are imprisoned by it and essentially doing things not out of the joy anymore, but just to keep your stuff or acquire more stuff? Because that's when I feel like it doesn't stay fun. The fun part is the acquiring. The fun part is in the admiring of it, or, you know, it's okay to kind of show it off a little bit, you know, and have a little bit of pride. Oh, look, I've collected all of these things around a theme. Mildly separates us from animals. Most animals don't necessarily collect a bunch of things around a theme. Some of them do, but most don't. And that's one of the things that makes us human, is that we can hunt and gather things and put like things together on a shelf. But, you know, if you didn't have those things anymore, would you still be okay? So it's finding that balance between collecting, enjoying stuff, but then also not feeling like it's everything in the world. And the Stoics, I feel like, are kind of divided on this issue, because many famous Stoics either had nothing or had everything. And there's some, a little bit debate, like, well, you can't have stuff if you want to be. And I don't think that's, I personally don't believe that that's true. I believe, like, it's okay to have stuff as long as it doesn't define you. And so I just want to make sure that you're still you without your stuff, because I do believe the Diogenes quote. I do believe the idea that if for whatever reason you didn't have anything anymore, would you still be okay? And the answer is, yeah, you would be, and you could be. And someday you could acquire more stuff if you needed to or wanted to. I just know a lot of people who, as they get older, tend to free themselves of a lot of their stuff, get rid of it, give it away, have a garage sale, donate it or whatever, and feel sort of free. And I do think that's sort of one of the idea behind the KonMari method, Marie Kondo's, you know, does this thing bring you joy? But ultimately, are you the thing that brings you joy? And if you're the thing that brings you joy, then the stuff can be fluid. You know, you can enjoy it for periods of time, but it doesn't have to be permanent, because nothing's permanent. So curate your stuff while you have it. Find your joy in you. I know that's easier said than done, but at least it's something to think about and be aware of. And still enjoy collecting stuff in the process, you know? Still enjoy it as an accomplishment, or, you know, you can have it as a small point of pride, but just, you know, again, doesn't have to mean everything. But you know what? You mean everything to me, and I appreciate you for listening to this, because if you didn't, I wouldn't have a podcast. So thank you. And I will see you in your ears very soon. And some shows coming up in D.C. and Chicago, some other shows in the fall. So check out id10t.com/tour. And thanks. All right.
ID10T scanning complete. Enjoy your burrito.